Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Rick Pinion. Rick is the president of Pinion Financial Services out of Bethesda, Maryland. He's also a manager with the Sun America Securities. He's a member of our Brain Trust, and he is our financial planning expert, one of our financial experts. Rick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim.
It's good to have you back with us. And we're going to talk about something a little bit different today than we've been talking about in the past. We're going to talk about some questions to ask yourself before you go public. Now, Rick, why in the world would any company want to go public?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, let me also say, Jim, too, that as we discuss initial public offerings, mm-hmm. that discussions in this show would not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. And a person should always consult with their investment professional before making important investment decisions. I offer securities through Sun America Securities Incorporated, which is a registered broker-dealer. It's also a member of NASD and SIPC, and Pinion Financial Services is a separate entity from Sun America Securities.
Have to get our disclaimers in there, folks.
That's for sure. The lawyers are happy now.
Now that we've made the lawyers happy, all right, let's go.
So anyway, the reason that a company would want to go public, I think, is for a variety of reasons. Perhaps the most, though, is that most small businesses desperately need cash, mm-hmm. especially as they're growing very rapidly.
You know, as you're saying that, every small business owner that's listening is saying, they're nodding their head vigorously.
They're saying, amen.
Say that again. Every small business owner needs cash.
Desperately needs cash.
Desperately. Yeah, I like that word. That's a good word.
And so they have several choices. They can go to an angel. They can go to a bank. But perhaps the thing that many people dream about someday is floating their stock, mm-hmm. or is creating an initial public offering. And by doing that, they can tap into the resources of thousands or millions of people all over the globe.
Yep. Well, the thing about an IPO, the thing about going public, and a lot of small business owners out there are hearing you. They're nodding their head. They're saying, yes, that's what I need to do. I can't borrow any more money from my banker. I don't know any angels. So, how do I do this? What's this all about? Well, the truth is that it's a big deal. I mean, it's a very convoluted, very laborious, very expensive process to do this, and you have to be a certain size, don't you, to be able to go public.
That's true. As a matter of fact, if we look at the progression of most businesses, they probably start out as a sole proprietorship, perhaps move into a partnership, eventually move into a corporate status. And when they've reached a certain critical mass and they can afford the costs of going public, and by the way, the cost can be quite large, especially for accounting and lawyer's fees.
Oh, yeah.
At that point, it's time to seriously think about it.
What size company do you think you'd need to be? What's the typical parameters that you'd need to be to be able to justify going public?
Gosh, I would say that you'd probably be looking at a firm that has at least 100 employees. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's exceptions to every rule.
Well, it's more a matter of sales volume, isn't it?
Yeah. And I would say that most companies, before they go public, they have at least $1 million of sales.
At least $1 million. Now, and I would have said more, but and it doesn't have anything to do with profitability, because look at all the companies you and I know have gone public in the last few years that have never and still haven't made a profit.
Isn't that interesting?
It's
amazing.
You have a company
that hasn't even made a profit, and yet they're willing to go public.
Of course, that's not that uncommon. I mean, I remember years ago some low-tech launches. I remember reading that when USA Today, the newspaper, the national newspaper, when they started out, they projected to lose money for 5 years. But they had public resources available to them, financial public capital available to them to allow them to do that. Some of the big internet companies now have still, I mean, they're one of the big dogs, and they still haven't turned a profit, and no one, I'm not even sure whether anyone knows when they will turn a profit.
That's true, and they're the darlings of the IPO market.
Absolutely.
And when you think about it, it's kind of interesting, too, because as a company grows, and I think everybody goes through these business plans that we talked about earlier in the show, mm-hmm. Many people come to the point where they ask themselves the question, should we go public, do we need to go public, and what are the expenses and costs of going public? And as you said, it's a very laborious task. In fact, in some cases, it's even crippled the company. It's caused more problems than it helped.
Sometimes it does, yeah. Especially some of the ones, and we'll talk about this later on, especially some of the ones who plan to go public, get everything built up toward the IPO. They try to launch, they're in the process of launching the IPO. They spend a lot of money getting it ready, and then because of market timing, they actually have to pull the thing.
Right.
And so, well, we might as well go ahead and talk about that now. The situation currently, I mean, we have... The last I read last week, Rick, there were 50 or 60 IPOs, I think, that were slated to go public or to be offered this month that I think have been they pushed them back, I think is the word they use.
Yeah, we call it putting it on ice.
Putting it on ice.
And, you know, that's very disappointing to the business owner, too. Because
they've
worked so hard, and they look at other comparable companies in their industry that are trading at, say, $50 or $60 a share.
Right.
And all of a sudden they want to enter their price in the market. And the window closes, and the market gyrates, and they've got to pull that out.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there looking at all these papers on their desk and all these fees, and they don't know quite what to do.
It could be hundreds of thousands of dollars, couldn't it?
That's correct. Case. It's a high-stakes gamble.
Yeah, it really is. And here we are. You know, here you are a week after your buddy that you know about went public last week, and you know his stock opened at 13, and it immediately went to 50, as you say. And maybe now it's trading, you know, in that range, in the $30, $40, $50 range.
Right.
All of a sudden you get a phone call and somebody says, we think we need to hold yours off.
It's the most delicate aspect of the whole initial public offering process.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you the conjunction of your process with the natural volatility of the market, as you say, is very important. That window depends on a lot of different things, doesn't it?
Oh, sure.
That window of opportunity.
It depends on the economy. It depends on interest rates. It depends on how Alan Greenspan wishes to speak.
Yep.
There's a whole lot of variables. It depends on the psychology of the market. It depends on what the day traders are up to. Just a whole host of articles.
Well, and you know, another thing with as far as market timing, in the old days, you probably wouldn't have wanted to have had an IPO come out around the time of a Fed meeting, of an open market committee meeting, which by the way is going to be next Tuesday. You wouldn't have wanted that, but nowadays you never know, because you never know when the Fed's going to announce something that can affect the market. Stand by, Rick. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. We're going to continue our discussion on 10 questions to ask yourself before going public. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Rick Pinion is our special guest. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 24 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and we're talking about going public with our good friend Rick Pinion. He's the president of Pinion Financial Services and a manager with Sun American Securities out of Bethesda, Maryland. And we're talking about some of the things that you need to look for if you're thinking about going public. If this is a dream, if you're a small business owner and you're currently as far as you can tell, you're a long way away from possibly going public. But it's something that's on your mind. It's something that you're thinking about. And I know if it is that you're reading as much as you can about it, you're trying to learn as much as you can. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to talk about this today. And Rick has put together a lot of good information for us to help you to understand how this works. And we were just talking, Rick, about one of the things we were talking about is the timing of the IPO, the timing of your initial public offering. And one of the things that we also mentioned was that you have to have a lot of people to help you out to get this thing off the ground. How many different disciplines are involved?
Well, Jim, you know, this is not amateur night at the movies. this requires a high degree of sophistication, and I think the first place that the business owner should look is to draw upon the knowledge of the experts.
Mm-hmm.
You need a highly developed plan put together by knowledgeable and experienced accountants and lawyers who specialize in securities laws.
Which means that unfortunately the lawyers and the attorney and the accountants that you've been using to run your business are probably not the ones to do the job.
That's correct. In fact, in many cases, it's a growth opportunity because you can tap into the resources of one of the big six accounting firms,
mm-hmm,
who have whole departments in this particular area. As a matter of fact, the big six accounting firms have gotten so big and powerful, Jim, that in the Washington area there's a new development happening. They're actually raiding some of the local law firms here.
Hmm.
And it's really frightening because they're taking out whole departments. And as they do that, of course, they're building up their power structure. So we're going to see some forces to be reckoned with as far as the big six accounting firms.
Well, and of course, there used to be more than six.
Right.
This has actually been going on for a long time. But they're probably going to wind up being the big two or three one of these days. You have to have, of course, another thing that spells out, and we were just mentioning this a minute ago, when you've got these brand new accountants, these brand new attorneys that you didn't know before you decided to go public, that really brings on a lot more expense. And do you have any idea, of course, I guess it's hard to say, every company differs, but do you have any kind of a rule of thumb about what kind of money it takes to actually pay for the kind of services that you need and the SEC filing and everything?
Well, just as kind of a heuristic rule of thumb, I would say that a business owner has to be prepared to put at least somewhere between, I would say, the starting fee somewhere around $25,000 to $50,000.
All right.
Get this off the ground. The expenses are enormous.
That's to get it off the ground. That's not the total ticket to get you to get to the IPO.
This is the starting point.
Yeah, right. And would you have any idea what it would cost to the rest of the ticket to go all the way to the IPO?
Well, I was reading some articles about some firms that had gone public, and some of the owners were talking about putting up high into the six figures by the time everything was said and done.
I wouldn't be surprised. I would have said at least $100,000, and that's probably a really, really low ball situation, and as you say, high in the six figures.
And not only that, but you also have to contend with the commissions that are charged by some of these huge investment firms.
Right.
That could go as high as 7% of the public offering.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't get around those commissions; they just have to be paid.
And those have to be paid whether your IPO is successful or not.
That's correct.
And so, folks, whenever you're seeing that some company just went public, and maybe somebody just made a whole lot of money, what you may not realize is that the day before that company went public, if there had been any kind of bad news in the market, and for whatever reason that IPO was the owner or whoever decided to not launch that IPO, that person who now is a multimillionaire might have been bankrupt.
Right, because the entire process should take about 2 to 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
But preparation and planning is really the key.
Right,
to
absolutely.
A successful launch.
Right. Another thing, one of the things that you talk about is the importance of examining certain aspects of the company, making sure that if you're deciding to go public, that you actually can. There may actually be some restrictions within your company that you might be surprised about. And I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking about some contracts that you might have, folks. And when we come back, we're gonna continue our discussion with Rick Pinion on taking your company public. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. If you have a question or a comment, the phone number is 888-822-8255. Stay with us, please. All right, we're back. It's 33 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Rick Pinion is our special guest and our good friend, a member of our Brain Trust, and one of our financial gurus. He is helping us to understand what it takes to go public, what you need to be talking about, what you need to be looking at if you decide to take your company public. And even if you're a long way away, even if you're years away from going public, this information is good for you. It's good to have in the back of your mind as you're making plans, as you're thinking about going forward, because there are some things that you could be doing today that will help you to accomplish the goals, to accomplish some of the things that we're talking about. Rick, one of the things that you point out is that some of the contracts that you currently have might actually prevent you from going public. How does that work?
Well, you can imagine, Jim, you're sitting down having lunch with your banker, and you're very proud of the fact that you're going to go public.
Yeah.
And around dessert time, you mention to your banker how excited you are. And the banker says, wait a minute, haven't you read the contract that you have with us regarding the loan we made to you? You say, well, no, I haven't. And the banker says, well, you better go back and take a look at that fine print, because our contract will terminate if there's any change of control within your company.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, wait a minute, I never thought about a change of control. Well, many times when you have a public offering, there's a shift of responsibilities within your corporation, and the banks don't like that very much.
Yeah. And especially, and by the time you're going public, you probably got some pretty significant lines out there with your banker.
And your suppliers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they may have the same kind of thing in their contract, so you need to pay attention to that. That's a good point that a lot of people wouldn't have thought about. All right, let's move on. And of course, we've already talked about the accounting firms. What about the legal firms? What about the lawyers involved?
Well, I think there it's more of a matter of specialization. And, you know, there's two ways to do this, obviously. One, and I think perhaps the best way, is to get a referral from another person in your industry who's also gone public that's used a law firm. I guess a less desirable way may be to look in the yellow pages under specialization of attorneys,
mm-hmm.
and see if you can find the one who specializes in securities law.
Right.
You could also go to your local bar association and get a list of different people that have specialized in this particular area.
Well, you also need to make sure that the people, whether it's the accounting firm or the law firm, both of them actually, or any of the specialists that you hire, you also need to make sure that they're used to that they have experience in your industry.
Exactly.
Especially the accounting firm, right?
Yeah, because remember, these are complex transactions, and each industry is a little bit different. And a lot of times there's a mismatch in terms of the chemistry or whatever between
mm-hmm.
the law firm, the accounting firm, or even we call them underwriters or investment bankers. And that mismatch could spell disaster later on.
So do you recommend that you find an accounting firm and have them help you find a law firm, or you find a law firm and have them help you find an accounting firm?
I think it could go both ways. I think obviously when you start, you need to get a list of players, and they can refer you to different ones, and you can get references from them.
Right.
I think references are very important because they may be helping other people within your industry. Say you're a high-tech or you're an Internet firm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there may be lawyers or an accountant that just specialize in that particular industry.
One of the things that probably will help you become prepared for going public in advance of actually doing that would be to have an audited financial statements. And have audited financial statements. Would you agree?
Of course, yeah. Because the SEC is going to look at that as part of their registration procedure.
Well, you're going to have an audited statement before you go public. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the new law firm, the securities accounting firm, I should say, the accounting firm that helps you to get your accounting requirements in order. They're absolutely going to do that. And if you've never had an audited statement before, which a lot of companies don't have, by the way, and it's not a requirement, at least it's not until you decide you want one, or until maybe your bank requires that you have one. But if you've already had a few years of experience of working with an auditor, with audited financial statements, you're going to be a lot better shape, aren't you? You and your company are going to be in a lot better shape culturally and professionally and financially to move into the public arena.
You know, something unusual happens, too, with most corporations when they become public, and that is the owner or owners have to bare their souls.
Mm-hmm.
When they put out a prospectus, I mean, they really dig deep into that corporation, and there's very little secrets left anymore. That's one of the reasons, by the way, a lot of companies don't want to go public.
Mm-hmm.
They want to keep it as a private or closely held corporation, because in that prospectus, it tells everything about the company. It gives accounting statements. It tells about the personnel. It reveals salaries and everything else.
It's another world, and a lot of people, I mean, I have known people who wanted to go public, who probably needed to go public, and their advisors said, you know, John, we don't think you can live in a public world. We don't think you'll enjoy operating in that world.
Yeah.
And the person decided not to do it.
And of course, you know, we also should take a positive approach too. And that is that if a person is willing to run the gauntlet, I mean, there's a tremendous opportunity out there to make quantum leaps into
Absolutely.
The future. So what we're trying to do, I think, is just to take a realistic view of the whole process. But when there's light on the other side of the tunnel, it can be a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, I don't think we're by pointing out some of the, as you call it, the gauntlet. I think that's a good way to say it. I think that's important because I think a lot of people look at these guys that are going public and they're seeing, wow, you know, they just they started their company, you know, and a few years ago, and now they're going public, and now they're worth $500,000 $500 million or whatever. But those people went through a lot and they risked a lot.
Well,
Rick, stand by. We're going to take a break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about another discipline involved in your IPO, and that's the underwriter, the importance of the underwriter. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Rick Pinion is our special guest. He'll be with us when we come back right after these messages. We are back. It's 44 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Rick Pinion is our special guest, and we're talking about going public. Some of the Rick, you mentioned a minute ago it sounded like we were being kind of negative, but the truth is I don't think people have any trouble imagining all the great things, all the positive things that could happen to you by going public. You know, we hear about the guy who was the president of the company, and he wound up with the venture capitalists and everybody that put their money in the company before they went public. Had such a large piece of the action that the owner, maybe he or she only wound up with 5 or 10%, but that stake still made this person worth a third of a billion dollars or something like that. So I think it's easy for people to imagine all the neat things, all the cool things, all the great financial successes that you can have from going public, but I don't think that most people probably don't know what's involved in going public, and that's the reason why I'm glad we're doing this today. Let's talk about the underwriter. What's the underwriter's role in this?
It's a funny term.
What is an underwriter to start with? Tell us what that is.
Yeah, isn't it funny? We hear words like underwriter and investment banker.
Yeah.
And somebody's son or daughter graduates from college and they say, I'm going to be an investment banker. And
mm-hmm.
Everybody looks and says, what's that? Well,
yeah.
It's neither an investor nor a banker.
Mm-hmm.
What these folks do is they're the ones that put together the deal. They're the ones that buy that initial stock, and they're the ones that promote that stock. They're the ones that make a market in that stock.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that help determine if that project's going to fail or not by how aggressive they are in marketing it.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that twist the arms of the big investment firms.
All right. But now tell us how that actually works. You said a minute ago, you said they actually buy the stock. What do you mean by that?
Well, in other words, they make a commitment to buy a certain number of shares of stock.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, it's very confusing, too, because many times you hear words like the New York Stock Exchange and the American Stock Exchange. That's not what we're talking about.
Mm-mm.
That's the second offering.
Right.
When stock starts to trade hands. The initial public offering is that offering that's bought by these firms and sold to their best customers.
And it's kind of a closed loop there. Everyone doesn't have the opportunity to get involved there.
Oh, no. No, they just call their favorite customers and
mm-hmm.
say, hey, we've got this. You have to be careful what they say, but
right.
They say, we have an opportunity for you if you'd like to latch on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the person says, that's great. Tell me a little bit about the company, and they describe the company. And then the investor says, okay, I'll take 100 shares of that.
So in making the market, basically what they do is they get a reasonable number of shares in circulation. Is that what they're doing?
Right, to help to pump up the price.
At a certain price.
Right.
And then once the IPO hits, then it becomes publicly traded on that same day?
Well, it's possible.
Yeah.
In other words, once the initial public offering, and by the way, there's a whole series of things that the SEC requires a person to go through in terms of the registration statement,
mm-hmm.
they have what they call a cooling off period that lasts for 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
They can take indications of interest. But just to make it real simple, we're talking about a process here where eventually the stock will wind up in public hands. And before it does, there's all these factors that are trying to get the price set. And I think you had asked a question before about how the offering price is initially determined.
Yeah.
And I guess the answer to that is very, very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
If the beginning price is too low, then the price can rise dramatically, and the corporation can lose money.
Yeah, some IPOs come out at $13 a share. Some of them come out at $18 a share. And recently we hear where the original plan was for it to come out at $17, and then toward the last minute they decided to raise it to $21 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How did they decide that?
Well, they decided that by looking at the overall market and how delicately they want to price that stock. And, of
mm-hmm.
course, the main thing they look at is what's the competition doing?
Right.
People in a similar industry.
So it's not necessarily based on any kind of valuation of the company. It's mostly
right.
It's mostly market conditions.
And if the price is set too high, the corporation may gain a quick profit. However, the stock could swing below the offering price, causing adverse publicity.
Yeah.
And investor dissatisfaction.
That happened a couple of weeks ago. One in particular I know that had it really took it on the chin was 1-800-Flowers. It opened at about 21. And that offering and a couple of others didn't go up, they went down.
Right.
But then there was one, Ask Jeeves, went public about a month ago and opened at like 16 or 17 and immediately went to 71.
It's amazing.
So you never know, do you?
And the other thing that happens too is sometimes in the beginning the price will take off like a rocket ship.
Yep.
And then the institutional, we call them institutional buyers, will pull out. And the little guys will go down the hill with the IPO. They hold on to it for emotional reasons.
let's talk about why an IPO might fail. We've got about a minute or so till we go to the next break. Why would an IPO, what would cause an IPO to fail?
Gosh, I guess there's several reasons. I think we talked about the initial, you know, the price being off.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that happens, too, I guess, is a business owner's ego gets wrapped up in his firm, and he or she thinks that this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But when they go to market that IPO, the public doesn't receive it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the main thing is the value of that company in the marketplace. And that's a lot to do with how it's promoted, how it's received, the price of the stock, and that sort of thing.
Another thing that you pointed out to me was that the Small Business Act of 1980 makes it easier to raise funds of up to $1 million, without the time-consuming restriction of registration for an IPO. Can you tell us quickly what that means?
Sure. That's to give some relief to small business owners, because if you're real small...
Go ahead.
If you're real small, then you need help, you need relief to get started.
The Small Business Act of 1980. We'll have to talk about that some more another day. When we come back, folks, as we wrap up the hour, we're going to talk a little bit about day trading. And Rick has a few things he wants to say about that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We are back. It's 54 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Rick Pinion is our special guest and our good friend. Rick is a member of our Brain Trust. He's the president of Pinion Financial Services and a manager with Sun American Securities out of Gaithersburg, Maryland. I'm sorry. I should say Bethesda, Maryland, shouldn't I?
You're close.
You're closer to Bethesda than you are Gaithersburg, aren't you?
I'm sitting in Bethesda.
You are? Good. All right. Now, we said we were going to talk about day trading, but before we do, I've got some other things, Rick, that I want you to talk to us about. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about the Small Business Act of 1980, which makes it available to which makes public money available to small business owners up to $1 million in investment capital. How does that work?
Right. In case you forget everything we've talked about so far, remember the mnemonic SCOR, S-C-O-R. That's S like Sam, C like Cat, O like Over, R like Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And that stands for the Small Corporation Offering Registration. And it came out as part of the Small Business Act of 1980. And it allows small business owners to come out with a public offering, and it makes them easier to raise money up to $1 million without having to go through the federal registration for an initial public offering.
Right.
The stock issued must be priced at a minimum of $5 a share. And I think the secret here is that depending on which state, you know, the business is in,
mm-hmm.
they still have to go through the registration on the state side and pass the merits of whatever the state may have in store for them.
Right.
And they have to file an information return with the SEC, but it avoids a lot of the hassle factor we talked about earlier.
And a lot of the expense.
Exactly.
Now, how would someone get started doing this?
Well, I think one of the things that might be very helpful is for a small business owner to go on the Internet and do a search engine for IPOs or initial public offerings. And there's a number of companies out there that will help them do this,
okay.
put together the pieces for them.
But didn't you mention a website that you had a minute ago?
Yeah, and as I was searching, you know, the web looking for some information for our discussion today, I came across one company that has a pretty good website. Do you mind if I mention their
name? Go ahead, please.
It's called Equity Analytics Limited.
All spelled out?
Yeah, Equity Analytics, Limited, and they're in California, and they have a very, very nice website, and they actually help small businesses go public.
Okay. All right, Equity Analytics. All right, email me that link if you don't mind.
Sure.
And if anybody wants it, then I'll be able to email that to them. If someone wanted to, if you didn't get the spelling on that, folks, we're not going to spell it for you right now. If you want that, send me an email and I'll send you that link back to you, and we'll get that started from there. We got about a minute or so. Let's change the subject quickly and talk just for a minute about day trading.
Oh my goodness.
A day trader and an e-trader are two different things. Someone who does e-trading, someone who trades for themselves, who manages their own IRA account or something like that, that's not the same thing as a day trader.
No. A day trader is rolling the dice with a click of a mouse.
Yeah.
They can win or lose tremendous amounts. And the other thing I was thinking about the other day, if they're making 30, 40, or 50 trades a day, and even if they're on, you know, a low-cost operating system, and they're paying 10, 20 bucks a trade, they may be spending $1,000 a day just in commissions doing
That's
day
right.
trading.
Not to mention that they're probably paying $300 to $500 just to have a place to sit so they can be hardwired and connected directly to the stock market.
Right, you imagine the tension they must go through.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, just one of the things, I'm glad we brought that up, because a lot of people think that a day trader and someone who manages their own IRA account, a self-directed account, is the same thing, and it's not. Rick, we got to wrap it up for this hour. You did a great job today. Thank you very much for helping us understand some of the issues that are involved in going public. We'll have you back again real soon.
Thank you, Jim.
Enjoyed it. Rick Pinion, ladies and gentlemen, with Pinion Financial Services out of Bethesda, Maryland. Got to wrap it up with this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be back in a few minutes with Jack Hauber. Harbor is our special guest and our
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.